Hi, I'm Steve Todd, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ, a radio program focused on learning more about the musicians that are entertaining you around Waterloo Region. We're featuring your favorite local singer, guitar player, or drummer, learning how they got started, influences, funny stories about past gigs, and upcoming performances. You'll also hear some great recordings of their work. In addition, we'll be learning about others in the music industry that are helping to maintain a vibrant music scene. This is Musicians FAQ. All right, so we're sitting here in Mannheim with Dan Todd. Thanks a lot for being on Musicians FAQ.
Thank you, Stephen, for inviting me. Stephen, if you guys don't know this, Stephen's my cousin. he's a Todd. His father and my father were brothers. So that kind of makes us kind of close, you know. And we were reminiscing about this. I remember as a teenager, you know, or even 11, 12 years old, going to visit you guys over on Borden Avenue in Kitchener, right off of King Street there. And I remember going up into your room and listening to you play guitar. And for those of you who don't know, Stephen is quite an accomplished guitar player.
Thank you.
And I mean, like, really good, you know, a great singer too. But I remember, you know, going up in your room and listening to you play these Iron Maiden licks, and I was just blown away because how does somebody know how to play like that? How's somebody that good, you know? And it was excellent. Yeah. But we're Todds.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why don't you talk about? Why don't we just start off with whether it's both the sets of parents or even your dad and your mom getting you guys into music? I know they were both involved in the church, and they actually cut an album at one point, right?
That's true. Yeah. Dad was a great influence for me. And I think what did it for me was I remember on Sundays we'd go to church in the morning, and then we'd all go home in the afternoon, have a nap after dinner, and then go back in church for the evening. There's two services on the Sunday, which kind of like, you know, wrecked your Sunday if you had something planned or whatever, you just couldn't do it. If a birthday party came up on a Sunday, nah, you weren't going, you know. But I was always surrounded by music, and I remember my father playing drums in the church, and I always thought it was the coolest thing because there's my dad. He was on that platform playing, and I know he had played in bands even with your father, you know, for years and years, and he played with Ron Heiser and then some of these Kitchener Cats, right? And Jimmy and the Roulettes. I remember there was these different bands.
I probably even have a picture of Jimmy and the Roulettes.
Yeah, something. Yeah. But I remember one Sunday I would have been six. Five maybe, and I remember we were in the church, there was nobody there, and Dad sat down behind the kit and he just started ripping into it, and I mean, I just remember it was the most awesome thing. I'm running up and down the aisles because there's nobody there, and listening to my dad do this
echoing through the whole church.
Acoustics, and it was fantastic, and it was just so big and live, and he's playing all these rudiments and stuff, and very old Buddy Rich swing kind of stuff, and which is not a genre that I was into, but it was just the awesome, you know, power of an instrument that's like the oldest instrument on the planet.
Yeah.
So I was so blown away by that, and I remember saying to my dad, I says, you know what, I have to do this. I have to play drums. Mm-hmm. And so we had a set of drums at the house that he had set up, and he got me on a practice pad, and I had practiced on a rubber pad forever. But, you know, single stroke rolls and double stroke rolls and different rudiments that he got me doing. And I was never like, it's so hard to describe, you know. Most drummers will tell you they hate doing rudiments, but it's kind of like riding a bike. All of a sudden, click, you get it.
Yeah.
It's there. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden you're working on something. It's like, hey, this is it. I've got it, you know? And once you learn how to ride a bike, you never forget.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty neat to watch a drummer too, because both your feet could be doing something different.
Yeah,
both your arms. Are
independence.
Doing
independence.
Amazing.
Yeah, Dad taught me a lot of independence exercises that that really helped me out. But you know, and then every time there was a hurdle, there was something new you had to learn, and you'd add a new element of difficulty to it. So it was a fun process. He was my hero. He was just
for sure
amazing. And I guess for myself, I always wanted to take it a step further than what he did. You know, Dad was somebody who was recognized in Kitchener. I wanted to go on to become somebody recognized, you know, in Canada and beyond Canada.
Yeah.
That was my my intentions and my goals.
Good for you. Yep.
You know, so and you know, I don't ever profess to be better than the other guy. I say I'm very blessed and very lucky.
So that was your early years.
Yeah.
And
I had a band with my brother.
Okay.
When I was in high school.
Good, okay.
And and I was ridiculed and made fun of because of it, you know. So, yeah. But
that was that the hair band.
Yeah, the hair band days. That's right.
And so like the we Poison were, and all those bands were popular.
Spandex pants and eyeliner, yeah, awesome. And you just kept putting on foundation until you found yourself attractive. So, but yeah, but I was the only one that really did anything out of that group of musicians, you know. And
yeah.
One of the guys went on to open up a large hunting and fishing camp.
Oh, wow.
up north, and one of the other guys became an electrician, and you know, Doug is doing his business, and
yep.
So it's, you know, so I kind of
yep.
was lucky enough to to hang on to the music,
like, like the words of Summer of 69.
Yeah. Yeah,
quit till you got married. So.
Absolutely.
Good for you. So that's up to the end of high school, and then I believe you went to Toronto after that. So.
Yeah, when I finished high school, my dad always said, you know, music is one thing, but you need something to fall back on. So I actually became a signed apprentice electrician.
Oh, wow.
And okay. And this was in 88, 89. And of course, the government introduced this new thing called GST. And so the entire economy back then just kind of went, you know, ass over tea kettle,
yeah.
if you want to say that. And so, you know, I was able to fall back on my hobby,
yeah.
you know. And so I ended up going on a tour. I got to tour the East Coast with the band because that was the only thing I could do.
Yeah.
You know, all my friends were starving, you know, for looking for work. I shouldn't say starving. We were all eating. But they were all looking for work. And I was lucky enough to go on a tour. And I went out to the East Coast. And I got to travel and play every night,
wow.
you know,
yeah.
and
what sort of band was that then?
It was a hair band. It was a fun
oh,
band.
Really?
It was a club thing. And
wow.
it was back in the days when you would go and spend a week in one town,
yep.
and you're on salary, and you made so much a week to do it. But it was great for me because I got to really cut my teeth,
yep.
on the East Coast and learn more about, you know, songs that had, formula, you know, the intros into the verses into the chorus. You just kind of knew that, you know, when the chorus would come in, you know, you'd get really big and loud, but
yeah.
and then when someone would start singing, you pull way back.
Oh, for sure.
Just the dynamics of learning how to play. And you know, it's something so simple, but you know, when you exaggerate something like that live, it really makes a difference.
Yeah.
And it was good for me because then, you know, I was ready to go when it came to the next thing.
Yeah.
So I had, I did that, and then there was just really nothing left for me here in Kitchener as far as where to play, you know. You've done the entire circuit here, and you still are,
yeah.
right? You know, if there's any bar to play here in Kitchener, I'm sure you've done it,
well,
you know.
Not everything, but more like in certain types of music I have.
Yeah, you know, and like, I've never played a country bar in Kitchener.
Yeah.
You know, I've played street festivals. I did stages a couple of times, you know, Bingaman Park, Lulu's, that kind of thing, but there was really nothing left, you know.
Yeah.
So I met a drummer, a fabulous drummer by the name of Randy Cook. He was playing with Lee Aaron at the time.
Oh, wow.
And he went on to play with Rick Emmett. And Randy is by far one of the best drummers in North America. There's no question. He's living in Los Angeles now. He plays with Dave Stewart. I've seen him working with Ringo Starr. Men at Work, and geez, he's played. I think he's out with Smash Mouth now too.
Okay.
So he's done incredibly well for himself,
yep.
and he's one of these session guys that's used for everything. So, but Randy encouraged me to move to Toronto, and I moved into a home with him, and learned a lot from him as far as, and he got me so tied into the scene, getting to meet people and getting connected. And he says, get out and play at every
yep.
jam.
And you're only 20.
I was 21 at the time. Yeah,
okay.
yeah. So you know, I'm in Toronto, scared.
Yeah.
You know, not knowing what to do, this type of thing, and but I went out and I played at every jam, every blues jam. I played blues till, you know, till the cows came home, and rock jams and stuff, and just got to know everybody. And what was really cool was, I just always kind of wanted to know people and networked and connected with people and exchanged numbers and stuff. And, you know, you go to a jam and, you know, you go out and play two or three songs, you know, with somebody. Next thing you go, hey, are you available next Friday? I could use you on this gig. Sure. So
yeah.
that's really kind of what got the
phone,
the phone ringing.
Yeah.
And so I had, you know, got connected with all kinds of different bands that were all signed, but it was all indie labels. But I was, you know, really lucky enough to go and play. And I got a call one day. saying, Dan, go down to this location. Honeymoon Suite wants to see you. So I went down, I auditioned for Honeymoon Suite, and next thing you know, I got a phone call that I got the gig.
Wow.
So, you know, again, I was just a kid.
Yeah.
And this was a band that I grew up a real big fan
of. Oh, for sure, yeah.
You know, and I think everybody in high school at that time was a big fan of Honeymoon Suite. And so I went out and played with them and learned a lot. And these guys were seasoned cats that just knew it, they had it down, and I was so inspired by the way they would put songs together, and Derry and I became great friends, and I spent a lot of time with Derry. He would say, let's go to the rehearsal place, and he would come up with these ideas and record everything, and he came up with one riff that was very much in 4/4, and I had heard something that was something that we were toying around with, and I threw it into a Rosanna type shuffle from Toto,
cool.
And it just changed the song completely, which inspired another song that he wrote.
Wow, okay.
You know, so and I can't take credit. It's all Derry. Honeymoon Suite is Derry Grant all the way. He is.
You're there to plant a seed, though.
He, well, you know, very lucky to be a part of it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and be that's lucky awesome. To be, let's just say, very lucky to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, no, good for you.
But
that would have paid the bills too, and you would have traveled across Canada.
I got to play some shows with Honeywood Sioux. That was great. Yes, yeah. And they ended up doing some more touring, and just with my schedule and everything else, I had gone on to do other things. Yeah.
All right, we're back. Thanks for listening to Musicians FAQ. I'm Steve Todd, and let's continue our interview.
From that, again, being tied into the system, or when I say the system, I'm talking about the scene in Toronto. Again, playing more, and I got connected with a buddy of mine, Nick Walsh. Nick was the singer for a band called Slick Toxic. they were a hair band that won a Juno and toured. They toured with, they played with Black Sabbath, they played with Faster Pussycat, they toured all, you know, all over the place through the United States and stuff.
7 o'clock and you got your ride. You think everything's all right. Next thing you know, the sun comes up. What the hell happened to last night? Makes you feel just like a king, but you ain't got no crown. A brief $1 million smile traded in for a lifelong frown. Why lies? Black truth. Why lies? Black truth. With a line.
I had just gotten back from doing a show. I was playing down in Trinidad. I got connected with this group of guys, and I was playing the islands and going down doing these shows. And I got connected to an agent down there, and I said to this agent, I says, you know, I want to come back to Trinidad, and I want to get connected to this scene. What band do you need? And he says, I need a Bon Jovi.
Oh, really?
So I called my friend Nick, and I says, can you sing Bon Jovi? He goes, yeah. And I said, do you want to go and play some of the islands and just get away from Toronto and just go and just jump on a plane and go out and have some fun? He goes, yeah. So next thing you know, we've been to Trinidad 3 times. We've been down to Central America, where we played in Honduras.
And you guys would be all in makeup and, like, were you costumed out or something?
No, we just went. We had a girl playing bass.
Oh, okay, so you weren't a clone band.
No, we weren't a clone band. We just played the music. But that's awesome. The thing is we were all such accomplished musicians that our bass player, or sorry, the bass player was a girl. The guitar player was bald and ripped. Like, he was just a big fitness buff, right? Yeah. So, and then there's, you know, me, and then there's Nick with his long hair and stuff. But the difference was with this was, if you were to close your eyes and listen to this band, it was like somebody put the needle on the record. We just had it down.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And of course, you know, playing along with tracks that would give augmentation to certain rhythm parts, and it was all to click and stuff. Yep. So it was something that was very, very, like a well-oiled machine.
That's great.
And
so you're probably playing at night, and the daytime you can just relax.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was crazy. And I remember going down to Trinidad down there, and I'm sitting by the pool. This is a great story, just kind of, we're going off topic here. Yeah. But you know, you guys want to hear about touring stories and stuff like this. So this, I'm sitting down by the pool, and this guy comes walking by, and he's got an ashtray, and in the ashtray he's got a tumbler glass with about maybe 2 shots of whiskey in it. And he comes walking by, and he looks at me, and he says, "And who might you be?" And I says, "My name's Dan." I says, "I'm from Canada." I says, "What's your name?" He goes, "My name is John Fellowane." He says, "I'm a guitar player." And I says, "I recognize your name." He goes, "Yes." He goes, "I played guitar. I'm here right now with Hugh Masekela, who's a very famous jazz trumpet player." And he was there with the rest of his band, Johnny. The name's going to ring a bell. It'll come back to me.
Yep.
But it turns out that his entire band that he was there with were the entire band that played and backed up Paul Simon on the Graceland record.
Oh, wow. Okay. I can call you Daddy, and Daddy, when you call.
So I'm surrounded by these legends.
Yeah.
You know, and it's John Fellowane, and Francis Foster was the drummer.
Okay.
And he played, you know, Diamonds in the Soles of Her Shoes. These are the guys.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sitting around with these guys just shaking, thinking, yeah, my goodness.
Were they also doing some shows?
They were down in Trinidad playing with Hugh Masekela at the time.
Yeah.
So we're talking with these guys, talking business, and you know, here, you know, John Fellowane's telling me, he goes, "I opened up a bunch of currency exchange places, so I needed something to hold on to while I could go and play my music." So he's got this other income coming in. Like, these guys are all smart.
Yeah.
You know, but they had some great stories about Paul Simon and you know, that album, and I think we've all heard all these tunes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you Can Call Me Al, and
yeah,
they're really great songs.
Yep.
So these are the types of things that you don't expect to happen on the road, you know, and stuff. But you know, that was the fun thing about playing, you know, down in Trinidad and down in the islands and stuff. And I used to freak my mom out. I remember saying to my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the Canary Islands." And, "Oh, that's fantastic," she say, you know, "You know what's really funny about the Canary Islands, Mom?" "What's that, Danny?" "Well, there's no canaries there." "And guess what, Mom? I'm going to be going to the Virgin Islands." You know, and she go, "Oh, that's nice. You know what's funny about that place, Mom?" "What's that?" "There's no canaries there either." Throw her off. But honeymoon suite, to doing that stuff.
Around, and I think I might have lost the way. You go in, you go out, you can diddle about, but you really have naught to say. So get up and get out and move on. I think you've been here much too long. So get up and get out and move on. There's really nothing else to say.
And while I was playing with Nick, I got a phone call from a guy, Ed Pilling.
Okay, yep.
And Ed Pilling had called me up, and he says, I got your number from Doug Inglis. He's the drummer for Gatto. And Doug and I had been friends, and we still are friends to this day. He's a super guy. I love Doug to death. Ed said, look, I'm from the band Flood. And he goes, are you familiar with us? And I said, I'm sure it sounds familiar. And he goes, well, we get played on Q107 and stuff. And we used to be the band that would back up Cat Stevens way back in the day. And he started playing me some of the songs. And so I met with Ed, and he gave me a copy of their one of the greatest hits albums. And he says, can you learn these songs? And I said, sure. So I listened to them, and I went in and rehearsed with them. And they said, we just want to hire you. There's no more auditions. You're the guy, you know. So I don't know how many other guys they had used at that time. But it was fun.
Just to fight. I'm Tom Nunn from Kitchener, Ontario, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo.ca.
So the nice thing about playing with these guys is, again, these guys, like Flood, they had like Cousin Mary and Brother and Me and yep. and What an Animal and all these songs that I started to hear on Q107.
Yep.
And it was really neat kind of being around these guys and learning, you know, what came out of Flood's Saga.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, Gatto. Yep. Gatto, you know, and Greg Godovitz, God bless him. I love Greg. He's a super, super guy.
Yeah.
And a real character, too. Yep.
I actually went to your... gig, because they did a I don't even know what kind of gig it was
the album release party.
And it was at Healy's.
That's
it was
right.
awesome.
Yeah,
great night.
Did I introduce you to Greg that
yeah.
night? Greg got
yeah.
it. Yeah. And
yeah, it was just a great, really cool night.
Yeah, it was good vibe. Yeah. Good vibe, you know. So that was to celebrate the release of the album Floodlights, which I recorded with them, and again, very lucky to be involved in this. And I played drums on it. I got to sing on it. And we brought in Ian Crichton from Saga. He played on one of the songs.
Okay.
Greg Godovitz played on one of the songs. But it was neat because I got to experiment a little bit. And
that's totally different. That's like 70s rock.
Yeah, totally.
Or early 70s yeah. compared to
absolutely.
Toxic type stuff.
Or, yeah.
You know.
And even the style of playing was still very much 70s.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I liked about Flood was those guys could sing. And they really sing,
yeah.
you know, and it was great being involved in that. Dave McCluskey, the keyboard player for Flood, he told me some great stories too. He had a career prior to joining Flood. Another one of these great stories. He's down in LA, getting ready to record an album, and he goes into the studio, and this guy comes up and he says, "Are you Dave?" Yeah. He goes, "Well, I'm going to be singing on your record. But I got to go and lay a track over here. Do you mind coming into the studio with me and just hang out, and then we'll go and do yours?" Dave said, "Sure." So he didn't realize he was talking to Michael McDonald.
Oh.
And Michael McDonald was literally putting down the vocal tracks on What a Fool Believes right in front of Dave
wow.
at this event. So, or in the studio okay. at this time. So Dave calls his manager and goes, "You got me playing with these guys. I can't keep up with this. How am I going to pull this off live?" You know, because he's in there listening to... you know, Mike McDonald laid down the tracks, the bed
yeah.
tracks, you know, the vocal tracks for What a Fool Believes. What a great song.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so these are the kind of stories that you'd hear.
I love it, yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. But
yeah.
Dave and I are great friends, you know, and actually I got to give him a call this weekend. He had sent me a message today. He wanted me to give him a shout. So you folks don't need to know that.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so, and I'm also thinking about some of the other bands that I'd been lucky enough to cross paths. Flood just kind of went and it was such a small market. You know, we would do certain gigs, a lot of corporate stuff, but
yeah.
then it just kind of Ed moved up to Innisfil where he's a rock star, you
yeah.
know what I mean, and in a community that's a lot of, you know, older musician friends and
that's
that
great.
Kind of stuff, so you know he's enjoying that, but
good stuff.
Yeah. moving along, I got connected with a bass player who he had his fingers into everything. He was doing so well, Rob Laidlaw. And Robbie and I became great friends, played a lot of golf together. And Robbie and I, we got doing this thing called Voices of the 80s, and we got backing up all kinds of people. Next thing you know, Robbie and I are playing with Survivor.
Oh, wow.
And Jimmy Jameson and stuff. Yep. And Jimmy was amazing. Okay. And here's a short little guy with these pipes.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and I mean, he would hum and dishes would rattle. And I'm not joking. You know, I remember when I first met Jimmy, and we're going into rehearsals right away down at Cherry Beach in Toronto. And Jimmy's from Memphis. And Jimmy always had the greatest stories, and I'll touch on those in a second. But Jimmy had come down to Toronto, and I'm in rehearsals with him, and I brought my son with me, who would have been 9 at the time, 9 years old, and we're doing Eye of the Tiger. And Jimmy goes to that, you know, into that line, you know, and he's waiting for somebody to go Eye of the Tiger. He puts the microphone in Taryn's face, and Taryn just kind of turns his head. Jimmy looks at me and just starts laughing. So, oh, it's just a cute moment. But,
we'll be right back.
I did a bunch of shows with them, and Jimmy would walk out on stage with this. It wasn't an arrogance. It wasn't I'm greater than you or I'm bigger than life. There was something so genuine about him. And sure. and you come across people like this. And he was one of these guys that, even though he had such a talent in his voice, he knew that, you know, he was very blessed with it.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that I enjoyed sitting with him and talking, we're driving down Highway 24 in Cambridge. I got the lead singer Survivor in my truck, and we're on our way to a gig, a corporate function, a lot of people, and I was exhausted. And I said, Jimmy, I says, I need a Tim Hortons. He says to me in his Memphis voice, "What on earth is a Tim Hortons?" And I said, "It's a coffee." So we go through the drive-thru, and I said, extra large triple, please. Uh-huh. And he goes, "What on earth is an extra large triple?" And I says, "It's just a big coffee." I says, "What do you want?" He goes, "I just want a regular coffee." And he starts feeling his pockets. He goes, "Damn it, man, I'm a millionaire and I don't got no money." So I bought Jimmy a coffee and we went through that and went and did the gig. And I remember him telling us stories. I'm backstage with Jimmy and he says, Joe Walsh comes by to pick me up. This is the kind of people that Jimmy hangs with, eh? So he goes, "Joe Walsh comes by to pick me up at my house." He's got that southern accent. He goes, "We go into this bar down in Memphis," and he goes, "As soon as we walk in the door, the place just freaks out." And of course, Joe jumps on stage with the band, grabs a guitar, and starts playing. And he goes, "This guy comes up to me and he goes, 'Hey man, you're Jimmy Jameson. I'm a huge fan of yours. I'm Joe's drummer.'" And Jimmy goes, "You're not Joe's drummer. I know who Joe's drummer is. Get away from me." You know, so "No, you don't understand. I'm Joe's drummer. I'm a huge fan of yours." So Jimmy's kind of blowing this guy off, and he just was sticking to Jimmy like a fly. And he goes, "No, you don't understand. I'm a huge fan of yours." So the night goes on. Jimmy blows this guy off. Security comes up to Jimmy afterwards and said, "So what did it feel like meeting Joe Strummer from The Clash?"
Oh.
And Jimmy goes, "That was Joe Strummer from The Clash? Man, he told me he was Joe's drummer." So it was a great story. And Jimmy goes, "Man, that guy died thinking I was a real jerk." but Jimmy wrote the theme song for Baywatch. And he had great stories about that. And he goes, "Man, that song kept my kids in diapers."
I bet.
Oh, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching,
oh, for
cha-ching.
Sure. Yeah.
He made huge money on that. And
well, I retired. He was...
Well, Jimmy wasn't the original singer in Survivor. But he did. He was a big songwriter.
Okay.
And he wrote... he did write the theme song for Baywatch.
Well,
and
okay.
It was originally written for David Hasselhoff to sing.
Okay.
But Jimmy said, "No, I'm going to write this in a key that he can't touch."
Some people need to have somebody when the edge of
people don't know this, but Jimmy was the fourth member of ZZ Top.
Really?
If you listen to all those vocals on "Give Me All Your Lovin'," that's all Jimmy.
Really?
Okay. If you listen to it carefully, it's all his voice.
Yep.
But, you know, and you can really tell when you compare it to, like, Burning Heart from Survivor and High on You, and where you really hear these pipes. You listen to all the backup vocals on all the ZZ Top stuff that became really popular in the 80s. You know it's Jimmy.
Okay.
He's all over.
That's cool.
You know?
Right.
So, but Jimmy has passed on. God bless him. He was such a good cat. And I did a whole bunch of shows with him. And I got to tell you, when he passed on, that hurt, because we became good friends, you know, and just the kindest guy ever.
In the
that's it for part one with Dan Todd, but please tune in a week or two for part two. Dan's going to be talking about playing with Mike Greeno from Loverboy, hanging out with Kim Mitchell and Alana Miles, playing with Larry Gowan and Terry Gowan, and also his many years with Platinum Blonde. So we're just going to fade out with Jimmy Jameson. Until next time, it's Steve Todd. Thanks for listening to Musicians FAQ.